Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. Our guest this week is Kevin Negandhi, who co-hosts the 6 p.m. Sports Center alongside Sage Steele. How are you doing and how are you getting used to the role?
Ryan's great. Honestly, so I've been here for 12 years and I used to do the 6 and fill in for the 6 many, many moons ago when, you know, Brian Kenny and Jay Harris were doing it. So to me, schedule-wise, before it was announced that I would get the role with Sage, I was doing it for 2 months. So yeah. I had an inkling on what we were doing and how we were doing things, and it's been so far. It's now 2 weeks and a couple days. It's been great.
Would you describe the show kind of as like the pregame show for the night in sports?
That's a good way to describe it. It's a good way to nail it, too, because we're getting everybody set, especially what we've done so far in the conference finals, now what we're going to do for the NBA finals, where we're getting everybody ready, all the interviews. For example, yesterday, I think we did more than a half a dozen interviews in an hour to get you set. And that includes also game one of the Stanley Cup final. So, yeah. And the other cool thing is too, we have day baseball and we're gonna have plenty more day baseball. So we're wrapping things up from the afternoon. If you missed it, how the Mets blew the game late in game one yesterday.
It's an evergreen topic.
Exactly. Verlander with his domination of the Bronx. We can get you that highlight first. And the way the schedule changes on ESPN's lineup programming wise, you know, in June, when Bomani and Pablo come on, we'll be the first ESPN Sports Center at 6 p.m. As a guy that was the first morning show Sports Center on ESPN when we debuted Sports Center AM, I take great pride in that, where our audience is fully aware of what's going on. They want to be caught up on things and then also setting things up for the rest of the day.
Yeah, you mentioned the morning Sports Center. So you were on that, yeah. And then you transitioned on to the Saturday college football studio host as your regular role.
Yeah.
Will you still be doing that this football
Absolutely.
Season?
Absolutely. So last year, I worked basically 6 days a week in the fall. And I think everybody here at the network understands that when it comes to the NFL and college football, we all want to be on TV. We all want to be around because we love the sport. We also know that, you know, our audience loves the sport. So to be involved in that, to still have that, and it was an amazing time. I had so much fun last year with the crew that we had, and it's something I've always wanted to do. I've looked up to the late, great John Saunders for years, and he became a mentor of mine, and it was his gig, and a few years ago, I was asked, hey, if John is not feeling well, could you fill in? And that was the first time a few years ago where I had a conversation with my wife, and I said, if an opportunity ever came down the road, just understand that if I could work Saturdays in the fall, I'm going to work Saturdays in the fall. And she knows. I mean, yeah. She's a diehard college football fan. She's a Florida Gator, and she was like, I get it. This is what you love. This is what you're passionate about. So If it puts me in a position to work 6 days a week in the fall for 13 weeks, I'm not going to say no. I'm not afraid to work.
So in the past couple of years, the pendulum has swung back and forth about what ESPN is looking for in SportsCenter. And it was before, it was they want anchors, and then they wanted people to do commentary in addition to the anchoring. And now I think it's swung back to anchors, at least as far as SportsCenter goes. Was there ever a time when they were really prioritizing commentary that you looked deep inside and you're like, oh man, I wish I had gone on the opinion path? Or did you always have faith that it being an anchor was like exactly what you wanted to be
being
doing?
Being an anchor is the one thing that I've always wanted to be. And if that gives me the opportunity where the cool thing is, for example, on social media, I can express my opinions on, for example, you know, my passion for Philadelphia sports. I'm not shy about that. I can have fun with it because I feel like that's my personal account. When I'm on TV, you know, I'll get people saying, oh, well, you're favoring a team. No, you know what? Actually, I think that I'm more in tune with a certain team, that I'm going to be more critical of that team because I actually know their flaws going into a game or coming out of the game. I'll never forget that when the Eagles lost in the NFC Championship game in 2009 against the Cardinals, they blew a second half lead, and we were on SportsCenter as the lead was going away, and, you know, Kurt Warner and his magic, and then they came on to us, you know, the game's over and we're on SportsCenter, we're dealing with the press conference. I was really hard on the Eagles because I knew why they fell apart. So when it comes to giving an opinion, I think giving an opinion where the fan knows that you are in tune, also that you're respectful, that carries weight. As long as you're not doing something that I feel like that's out of line in the sense of, well, the Cowboys stink and it's just because that's how I feel. No, no, that's not fair to the audience. If you talk about a team, I'm actually more in tune with teams than like the NFC East because I'm aware of what's going on with the Giants and the Cowboys and how Washington now has Alex Smith. So I actually think that benefits a conversation by being a fan and somebody who's involved.
If there's one sporting event or season that you would like to anchor, what would it be that you haven't done yet?
Wow, that's a really good question. Probably, you know, I think leading up to the Super Bowl would be amazing. I got a little taste of, you know, the college football playoff this past year. I've never had more fun, you know, where we could host stuff in the playoff, and it was the Sugar Bowl. That was my semifinal game. That to me is one of those, I want more. And what do I need to do more down the road? And to get a taste of that, I look up to guys like Reese Davis and Trey Wingo, and to see what they've done. You know, I to me, it's like following in the footsteps of guys that get it, that understand it, that have found success by being anchors.
Yeah.
Sprinkled in with a little opinion. That's how I identify.
Would you ever want to do the NFL draft?
Oh yeah, but Trey's been so patient.
I'm not saying kick him off.
But Ryan,
if
that
he
is
ever
actually,
retires.
I am a college football NFL junkie. You know, I'll never forget at 14, watching the 1989 draft and literally sitting all afternoon watching the entire draft. So I'm a junkie when it comes to the draft. I can't get enough of it. I plan my entire weekend around the draft, and that's just how it is. So when Trey's up there, you know, and he's doing the interviews, and he's got, you know, Lewis, and he's got Mel, and you know, I thought Herbie did a phenomenal job. I envision myself down the road in a spot like that, and you know, patience is the key. Trey had patience. I feel like it's going to be one of those things that'll pay off down the road.
When you're hosting SportsCenter and you have the producers in your ear,
yeah.
Is there a constant barrage of dialogue that's happening in your ear that nobody is aware of, or is it kind of hands off? I'm just fascinated by what you hear when you're narrating.
Each producer is different. Each director is different. So you definitely don't want the director in your ear. If he's in your ear, then something's really going wrong, you know? But the producer's the one that takes control of the show. So a producer will, many producers that I've worked with here will just, what do you like? Do you like communication or do you want me to just lay out? I'm one of those guys that I like communication. But I also like necessary communication. So if you could tell me something in 5 words over 10 words, give me the 5 words. But you get used to it. You know, it's kind of like tuning out and picking the information that you need and feel that's necessary. My first job was in Kirksville, Missouri. I was 23 years old, and it was the summer of 1998. And we were in a small town. Truman State University was one of the schools there. It was a very good communications program. So many of our directors were 21, 22-year-old kids that were going to school there, and they were directing, you know, our, you know, newscast. And all day long, that there was a Backstreet Boys song that was out, and we were, you know, having fun with it and literally singing awful notes to that song all day. They introduced me on the set that night at 10 p.m. They tossed to me, I have 3 minutes. My director, who's a 21-year-old, and now, you know, we could laugh because he's in his 40s. he starts singing the entire song in my ear while I'm doing the entire 3-minute sportscast. And you know, that was kind of like, hey, get used to it. You're thrown into the fire. You pop out the earpiece and you just get used to it. After that, you know, 20 years in the business, you deal with people in your ear all the time. It's just managing from that ear what's going here to what's coming out of your mouth.
Yeah, I guess like that's one way to prepare you by fire.
Yeah.
You're obviously a big Philadelphia sports fan. You had your whole life to kind of anticipate what would it ever be like if the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Was it underwhelming? Was it exactly what you thought, or was it even better than you thought?
It was better than I've ever thought, because of the combination of how they did it. It was unexpected. I really thought 2018 was going to be the year, the 2018 season.
Yeah, this upcoming season.
Yeah, so when they started the way they did, I always just said, this is fantastic. Just let's get to the playoffs. Let's make sure Carson's healthy. Let's get the playoff experience. Kind of similar to how I viewed this Sixer season. Let's get to the playoffs, make sure Ben and Joel are healthy. If we get a first round win, phenomenal experience for 2018. So as they were continuing to go, then you started to see how really good they were and how wide open the NFC was, especially with Rodgers getting hurt. And there was some unknown and the Cowboys going through what they went through. I thought there was a window for this team because defensively, too, they had stepped up. They've done a great job. So when Nick Foles struggled when he came in late December, it was very frustrating. And I viewed the whole thing that let's just get by the Falcons and we'll figure it out. Let's figure it out with the Vikings. And then when they got the chance to go to the Super Bowl, I was on the fence because I was there in that Super Bowl in Jacksonville, Super Bowl 39, where they lost to the Patriots. I walked out of there saying I would never go to another Super Bowl featuring the Eagles again.
And, you lied.
And well, that week I told my wife, I was on the fence. I was like, I don't know if I want to go. The way this team is, the way who they're playing, how they're stacked. And my wife was like, you are going. You are going to find a way. Because I was debating, hey, do I stay home and watch the game with my two boys who are, you know, 5-4 at the time, and they love, you know, the Eagles as much as I could have ever dreamed of having sons loving the team. To go there, to actually do SportsCenter that morning, get on a plane, find a way to get there before the end of the first quarter, see the first touchdown, to be at the after party with the team, to host the parade days later in Philadelphia on ESPN, I don't think I could have ever dreamt all those things happening together.
So you got there in the first quarter. Does that mean you're like watching the first 10 minutes of the game on your phone?
Here's the deal. I leave SportsCenter early that morning. I catch a ride to LaGuardia, catch a flight, and I have to connect in Detroit. Yeah, so I have to connect in Detroit. And I'm actually ahead of schedule because I know when the anthem's playing. I know where the stadium's at. I've mapped the whole thing out. I was meeting one of my college buddies at the stadium. So everything was mapped out. I had already mailed him the ticket, so he got in. And unfortunately, I get off the plane in Detroit. It's snowing. So I run down to my gate. My plane's there. And I'm like, okay, good. I asked the guy, I'm like, we're good to go? And he goes, yeah, the plane's here. Everything's good. And I'm like, all right. We get on the plane, right? And I am actually 20 minutes ahead of schedule to land in Minnesota, which gives me 40 minutes to get to the stadium, national anthem, all that stuff. I'm like, this is going to be perfect. I'm on the plane. They have to de-ice the plane, but there are two planes in front of us. And we have to wait 45 minutes on the plane while it's snowing. So It's a funny thing that I actually
– and it's like you're like, am I going to be stuck in Detroit for this?
Oh, the whole time, yes. Like, just get us in the air. I'll figure it out, right? And the whole time I'm documenting this on social media, and a couple of my friends here at ESPN were like, you should tell everybody what's going on. I'm like, no one cares that I'm doing this. They're like, no, people are following you. They're following this journey. So I literally arrive. When I get off the plane – all the bars, basically Minnesota's airport is empty, but the bars are open. They're playing the national anthem. I could hear it bar to bar, right? So I run straight down, get an Uber. And this sweet lady from Minnesota picks me up. She's in her 60s and she's driving a minivan. And I basically tell her, I'm like, here's the deal. I need to get to the stadium. I need to get inside as quickly as possible. I will give you the greatest tip of your life. And
and she's just kind of like turning to GTA in a minivan.
She's going 55 miles an hour. The car's passing us as we're trying to get to the stadium. The best thing about her, though, is when you're, you know, Super Bowl stuff, security is pretty intense. So they had blocks. You know, the way that stadium is, beautiful. The way the stadium is built in that location in the city, you have blocks that are blocked off, streets that are blocked off because of security. She took me down two back streets because she's a local driver, got me as close as possible. I get out, I get in, I go through all the security. I'm walking in, and as soon as I sit down, LeGarrette Blount has a big run, about 20 yards, and it's a 3-3 game. And there's about 4.5 minutes left in the first quarter. And then I sit down. My buddy's there. He gives me the drink that he already ordered for me. And Alshon Jeffrey scores the touchdown. And to me, it couldn't have been written any better. So it worked out great. And then I was in the corner end zone where, you know, the 4th-and-1 Philly special happened, you know, to close out that first half. So I couldn't ask for a better scenario.
Speaking of the Sixers, and like you said, that you were hoping the Eagles would be like the Sixers this year. Do you think that regardless of what happens now, that Sam Hinkie's vision has been justified based on the fact that they got a team assembled that you reasonably believe could one day win a title? Or do they have to win a title to justify really 5 years of losing on purpose?
No, I think what Sam Hinkie's dream was is that, hey, drafting in the lottery is a roll of the dice. And the key is that if you can get in the lottery as much as possible and potentially get a ping pong ball that lands at 1, 2, or potentially 3, you will have more opportunity to succeed. You're going to miss. And I think that one of the narratives is that Sam was perfect on all his picks. He wasn't perfect on his picks. I mean, he missed on Nerlens Noel, Michael Carter, you know, Williams. There are certain things that, yeah, didn't work out with Okafor. But if you nail, like, you get more opportunity in those 4 or 5 years to get a top 5 pick, you're eventually going to nail it. And that's what they did with Ben Simmons, of course, at number one. And the Joel Embiid play, I mean, everybody in Philadelphia at the time was bummed because Embiid doesn't get hurt before the draft. He goes number one, and the Sixers would get Andrew Wiggins at number three, and the entire city at the time wanted Andrew Wiggins. So the way everything worked out, there's a little chance, there's a little luck, but at the same time, you have to be prepared. I think when you look at the strategy that Hinkie put together, it makes sense. Listen, if the system's flawed, he figured out a way to attack the system. It's not Hinkie's fault. But I got to tell you, in the beginning, I wasn't crazy about it. There were some things where I'm like, this is brutal to watch some of these games in this roster. But now, eventually, it's paid off where you have two foundations that you can build off of. And, you know, the jury's out on what we're going to get with Markelle Fultz, but we had the assets to make that trade for Colangelo to move up to get number one. Now, when you watch Jason Tatum, you start to wonder and scratch your head. But at the same time, it's just year number one. There's so much. I mean, it took Embiid 3 years to see that plan with him would work. It took Ben Simmons 2 years. Because let's not forget, Simmons had to sit out his first season. So we kind of look at Fultz as this was his redshirt year. Let's get right. Let's get physically stronger and mentally stronger. And we'll be ready to go.
Would you want LeBron to go there?
Oh, absolutely, without hesitating.
Don't you think it's a little bit of an odd fit where, like, Simmons isn't a great shooter, Fultz isn't a great shooter, LeBron always needs the ball in his hands, Simmons thrives with the ball in his hands. I feel like, I guess, look, he's the best player on the planet.
Yeah.
But I don't know if on, like, a 5-year time horizon, getting LeBron right now would be, like, their optimal thing. Well, you disagree that.
So here's how I view it. If you have the chance to get the best player in the world, you get him, because then everybody else will feed off of him experience-wise, understand how to win in a playoff situation. That's this whole first round was figuring out how to win in a playoff situation. You also look at the relationship that Ben Simmons has with LeBron James. He looks up to LeBron. LeBron understands that I'm mentoring this kid. They have the same agent. They have from the same agency. They're extremely close. I think that plays a huge role in whether this could work. Because I think LeBron's not going to be in a place where he's going to stunt Ben's growth. I think he's actually going to help him with things that we may not see. It's stuff off the court. It's stuff that you're going to see in practice develop. So that's why I look at the idea of LeBron being around guys. And when you look at what LeBron did this year, he's in year 15 at 33. I think he's got two or three more years at this optimum level the way he keeps himself in shape. If you can set him up where you can extend his career because you also have two or three young guns that can run the floor and they can carry the load to a certain extent a little bit, I think the Sixers benefit.
I feel with the shooters that they have or don't have,
yeah.
I think like he's going to wind up having to like shoulder a lot of the burden with the drive.
And you may be right. It may be right for this upcoming season, but I think it will definitely help long-term the development of – let's not forget, like, when you look at Simmons and B, we're talking about 21, 22, 25-year-olds. Markelle Fultz is not even 20. Those guys being around somebody that understands what to do and how to be a superstar, because these guys all have superstar status in the sense of what they could be down the road, you're going to feed off of that and benefit from it. And so I think that LeBron actually could protect these guys in bad situations in playoff scenarios and have these guys learn that way. Plus, when you look at what the Celtics are putting together, they're going to need a type of LeBron player to help the Sixers or Paul George. And I think if you look at Paul George's fit, if he doesn't decide that he wants to go to Oklahoma City or the Lakers, or I should say stay there or go to the Lakers, I think Paul George, who he is, what he can do, would fit this roster perfectly.
I'm going to do a hard left turn now. You've worked on the Special Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
How does that kind of compare and contrast to other sporting events that you've anchored?
So I've done it for 4 years. It is my reset to everything. It gives me the understanding of why I got in the business. Because it's passion for sports. It's the opportunity. Yeah, as a kid that was Indian American who would watch TV, who didn't see anybody of my likeness doing anything come to
You stole
to
my
American
next question,
sports,
McCollum.
Right? You know, no, that's how I relate to many of the athletes at Special Olympics. All they ask for is an opportunity, the chance to be, you know, included. And they get this on this big stage. There is nothing better than seeing their smiles and seeing the families and the friends that are around at these events that give in their time, that understand what it means to them. There's nothing more satisfying. Like, some of the stories you see, they are my favorite stories to tell. And that's what our job is when we do this coverage, to share those stories. Because I think the fan at home, while we are paying attention to scoreboards and wins and losses, there are other sides to why we love sports. It's to actually be involved. And that's what this whole event is about. And to be able to do it again and represent ESPN, I take it seriously. It's one of my favorite opportunities at the company. And I can't wait for Seattle.
So you mentioned being Indian American and not seeing a lot of people that look like you on television. There's some more of South Asian descent now, like you, Adnan Firk, Adam Amin, who's a great up-and-coming play-by-play caller.
Superstar.
There's not a ton, but I was wondering if you had seen anybody growing up that looked like you, that you aspired to be like, or that you just were like, okay, I'm going to do it in spite of the fact that this isn't right now what television looks like.
I didn't see one person. So for my parents who came from India, you know, my dad came in 1969, my mom came in 1971 after my dad had to set up he came to America with $2 in his pocket and lived in a YMCA for 2 years. Then she came over with my mom and my she came over with my brother to convince an Indian parent that this is what you want to do without a guarantee of security when it comes to family, job, lifestyle, to convince them that, hey, other people are doing it. The only way you could do that is to show, hey, let's sit down and let's just watch somebody on TV. That's how you convince, like, an Indian parent. Indian parents, what they see is lawyers as successful, engineers as successful, hotel owners, gas station owners, grocery store owners, guys that are, you know, I think doctors. I mean, half my family is, you know, in the medical field. They see those things as job security, right? So it was extremely tough selling this to my family. So at one point, I had to, when I pitched it, I think my family thought it was a phase. I definitely thought my mom and dad thought, you know, by my junior or senior year, I'd basically be like, it's not happening. I'm going to go into business. I had to actually make a promise to my dad because my dad said, all right, you're going to be making $15,000 in your first job. What are you going to be making at this stage, at this stage, at that stage? And I had to basically map up and tell my dad, at 30, Dad, if I'm not making this amount of money, I'll leave the business and I'll come back to you and we'll figure it out. And my dad was like, okay, I trust you. We'll figure it out. But I also think that a lot of them, you know, like, you know, I've been here 12 years, about my third year here. God bless my mom, who's my biggest fan in the world. And she loves ESPN because of me. But she was still telling me to take the LSAT. She was still giving me options. My brother had to tell her one day, hey, Mom, he's good. Like, he's reached a point where he's good in his career.
Like, no, there are very few lawyers that wouldn't trade spots with
him. Exactly. But here's the whole point of it is because the parents that come over here in America, they look at what's stability for my son or my daughter down the road, not just now, but for their families. So if I'm no longer here, how can they sustain their own families and continue to build things? So to sell that to them and for them to have the patience and belief in me, I'm forever grateful. And I come back to that story about what they see. I was at an event. I was the South Asian Journalism Association convention at Columbia a few years ago. And I was looking at sitting in a round table discussion, and this young lady next to me taps me. She's a freelance writer at Vogue, and she's of Indian descent. And she's like, can I talk to you for a quick second? And she's like, I just want to say thank you. And I'm like, oh, for what? And she tells me a story that while she's in media and she's in the business, her younger brother wanted to become a sportscaster. And every day you talk about becoming a sportscaster, and their mom would say, no, you're going to become a doctor. He was like in ninth grade. And she was like, this is the one thing I know you're going to do. You're going to become a doctor. And he goes, I want to be a sportscaster. And she goes, show me one Indian that does this. And literally that morning, he went to the living room, turned on the TV, and I popped up on SportsCenter. And at that moment, the mother told her son, okay, I get it. What do we need to do to help you get there? Wow. And I bring that up is because we are the type of people that see, if we see success, then we could see it translate here in America. Then we can understand that you could do it. And when she told me that story, I was kind of blown away by it because I could completely relate to it and understand it. But I think it's kind of what we carry. Like you mentioned, you know, Adnan Virk, who's been fantastic. Adam Amin, who's going to be a superstar. Anish Shroff's done an amazing job when he was a part of Dream Job. And I think he came in second place. And then he went local and he came back around and earned it, cut his teeth on ESPN News. And now he does play-by-play with college basketball, football, and lacrosse. Zubin Mehenti, who reached out to me when he was in local in New Jersey, and we've always kept in touch, and now he does an amazing job here. I take great pride that, you know, being the first one here, that we have continued to expand, and now we're everywhere you go, you're seeing us. And that's, I think, inspiring the next generation. And then it blends over to seeing all the Indian comedians that are everywhere here in America with success. And now there's Indian actors everywhere. So we are slowly but surely breaking into the mainstream, which is great for us.
Is there anything we didn't talk about that you're dying to discuss right now?
No. I think we covered everything. By the way, I think you're onto something with the idea of LeBron and KD teaming up together in Miami.
Or Miami or the Lakers. Well, that was my idea when Kevin Durant was sleepwalking in the first half. I think LeBron could still leave the Cavs, even if the Cavs win. I don't think that he thinks like, oh, I have to defend this title with the Cavs. He rightfully believes that he is the defending champion, and he wherever he goes
he carried Cleveland. Like,
yes,
he's 2016. He never needs to apologize to anybody for any decision he makes. I'm more fascinated that with the Rockets losing last night, now more than ever, I can see a window opening with LeBron going to Houston.
Maybe. I thought Durant would leave if they lost last night.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't see him leaving the defending champs. So that my LeBron Durant 2018 dream probably died last night in the second half when the Rockets were missing 79 straight threes.
It's amazing. It's amazing they still had a chance. Like, even though they were missing, you know, 15 straight, 20 straight, they were still within 6 to 8 points in that game.
Yeah. So. Anyways, this was the Glass Half Empty podcast. That's Kevin Negandhi. He co-hosts the 6 p.m. Sports Center. Thank you very much, Kevin.
My pleasure, Ron. Thank you.
Such turned stranger.